ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीशुक उवाच एवं युधिष्ठिरो
राजा
जरासन्धवधं विभो कृष्णस्याच्छानुभावं तं श्रुत्वा प्रीतस्थम् अब्रवीत्। Shukadev Goswami said, having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha and also of Almighty Krishna's wonderful power, King Yudhisthira addressed the Lord as follows with great pleasure. Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha Yesus Trilokya Guruva Sarve Loka Maheshwara Vahanti Dulabam Labdha Sirasaivanu Sashanam. Sri Yudhisthira said, all the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. Purport. Srila Prabhupada renders Maharaj Yudhisthira's statement as follows. My dear Krishna, O eternal form of bliss and knowledge, all the exalted directors of the affairs of this material world, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and King Indra, are always anxious to receive and carry out orders from you. And whenever they are fortunate enough to receive such orders, they immediately take them and keep them in their hearts. Hare Krishna. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 74, The Deliverance of Shishupal, Text 1 and 2. In the previous chapters, we read how Krishna was in Dwarka peacefully with his family, the Yadus. It was at that time Narada Muni came and told Krishna that Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice to honor you. At that same time, a messenger came representing 20,800 kings who were being tortured in prison by Jarasandha. They had no shelter anywhere except calling out for Krishna's help. Krishna inquired from Uddhava, what should I do? Because there's two different requests. And Uddhava gave him his advice. Krishna, who is all-knowing, takes great pleasure in reciprocating with his devotees' love in many ways. The gopas would play with Krishna. They would joke with Krishna. Yashodamai would chastise Krishna, would feed Krishna, would protect Krishna, along with Nanda Maharaj. The cows would provide the best of their milk to Krishna. They would eat their grasses only for Krishna's pleasure. The gopis would dance with Krishna. They would make garlands for Krishna. They would please Krishna in every way. In this way, each devotee had their particular ways of giving pleasure to Krishna. And Uddhava, one of the ways he would give pleasure to Krishna was giving advice. Just as Krishna would, in the Damodar Lila, he would accept the role of being subordinate to Yashoda, being bound by her ropes, crying when she chastised him, pleading for mercy when she showed him this little stick. When Krishna is in Dwarka, he's a royal prince. He's Dwarkadish. It's a very different type of mood than Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a simple forest where Krishna has the simplest of all services. Going out from morning till evening, just through the forests and the pastures of Brajbhumi, making sure the calves and the cows are happy. And while doing that, playing limitless games and having loving relations with his friends. Krishna wasn't attached to jewels. He liked better the gunja, the little red berries that grow everywhere in Vrindavan. They would make little malas out of gunja, little seeds. He would take the feathers of peacocks and other birds and decorate his body with it. And especially they would take the dirt of Vrindavan and literally cover every limb of his body with the dirt that was raised by the hooves of the cows and the calves. And sometimes they would take the minerals from the ground of Sri Brajbhumi and decorate each other's bodies with that, especially Krishna. And he would lay on the ground under a tree on the lap of one of his friends with his head. He would make the legs of his friends his pillow, and they would take little fans made out of leaves and fan him. In this way, he was happy. In Dwarka, he's living in many palaces. Each palace is just more filled with wealth and jewels and opulence than even Indra's in Swargaloka. When he comes to the Sudharma Hall, where he presides along with Maharaj Ugrasena, Ugrasena is officially the king, but he absolutely accepts Krishna as the king. Krishna is everything to everyone. And he sits on royal thrones in a royal assembly house. People give him the most precious ornaments, crowns. That's how he lives in Dwarka. He's accepting the love of the Kshatriyas of the Yadu dynasty according to who they are and what is valuable to them. And he's accepting the love of the Brijvasis according to their love and what's valuable to them. For the Brijvasis, the dust of Brajbhumi and some peacock feathers
to the Cowherd boys. They're far more fun to play with than diamonds and emeralds and rubies. Who cares about that stuff? Cowherd boys, they don't want to fight wars. They want to jump and imitate frogs and make the sounds of birds and play with the monkeys. So that's what's valuable to them. So each devotee in each place is offering what's most valuable to them, to Krishna. And Krishna accepts not the thing, but the love. And because the Brijavasis, in their complete simplicity, Krishna appreciates Vrindavan supreme. When Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan with the pretense of giving them a message so that they would be pacified in separation, his internal reason was because Uddhava had surrendered his heart and soul and was most dear, he was giving Uddhava a special blessing that no one else from Dwarka was directly receiving. He was giving him a chance to understand what is the gopi's love for him, so that he could really appreciate and be humbled before that love. So in this particular chapter, Krishna's apparently undecided what to do, because that's the way the world is. In this material world, even when God comes to this world, there's so many apparently opposing elements we have to choose between. And even in the service of the Lord, what should we do now? What should we do next? What is our priorities? Because actually, in devotional service, it can be confusing, it can be challenging, because there are many different ways of serving. And there are many different ways that we can address the same challenge. And there are many different devotees who feel strongly about what they think is best. Have any of you ever had that experience? And because they think that's really the best way of dealing with a situation, which could be a critical situation, it needs to be addressed immediately. They feel very strongly because of their nature, because of their views. Then naturally, when you have to make a decision, they are expecting you to take their side. That's the way material life is. And that's the way we live in devotional service also. But our decision is param drisva nimartate. The higher taste we understand is sam siddhir haritoshana. What will please Krishna? But then each devotee feels very strongly, this is what pleases Krishna. So even Krishna's in this situation, and he is Krishna. Obviously, when Narada Muni is saying, go to Indraprastha and do the Rajasuya with Yudhisthira Maharaj, this will be the greatest benefit to the whole world, you should go. Obviously, he's saying it to please Krishna. And the Yadus, they're Kshatriyas. They're seeing that this Jarasandha is causing havoc in the world. This must be ended, his reign of terror. You must go there and free the kings and liberate Jarasandha. So Krishna turned to Uddhava. Now, Uddhava is a devotee. He doesn't want to displease the Yadus, his relatives. He doesn't want to displease Narada Muni. So he speaks a compromise. Not exactly a compromise. It's not a compromise. It's a synthesis. It's a symbiotic, as GEV would say. It's a symbiotic solution. That yes, we must do the Rajasuya, as Narada Muni is saying, Yudhisthira Maharaj wants it, but you can't do the Rajasuya as long as Jarasandha is there. So let's do both. And he told how to do both. So Krishna goes to Indraprastha in a beautiful procession, and he's welcomed by Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas, and Krishna, in order for the Rajasuya to happen, Jarasandha was the one king in the entire planet who was not willing to cooperate with Yudhisthira. So therefore, Rajasuya could not be done as long as he was like that. And Uddhava gave him the specific advice of how Jarasandha could be killed. Bhima. So according to Uddhava's advice, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima went in the guise of Brahmins, knowing that at a particular time of the day, Jarasandha was very, in his own way, very devoted to the Brahmins. He knew that there's a higher power beyond his own. He needed blessings. And we find this, the really, really powerful asuras, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Jarasandha, they had a very unique religious life. It wasn't just like today, it's just all about me and my intelligence and my power. They understood, yes, it's my power, but my power has to come from a higher source. Hiranyakashipu performed incredible Vedic sacrifices and tapasya for Brahma, Ravana for Brahma and Shiva, Kumbhakarna for Brahma and Shiva. So Jarasandha, he would give charity. Brahmins would come to him every day, and whatever they wanted, he would give. So they begged, as Brahmins, they begged for a fight. Jarasandha said, Krishna, you ran away from me in battle. He wasn't just saying this. He was so covered over by illusion. He didn't think about the fact that Krishna defeated him 17 times. And just let him go. It's like a play, just like a cat catches a mouse and then lets him go, and then catches him and lets him go, and catches him and lets him go. And when the mouse is let go, the mouse is thinking, I have defeated the cat. Does that make sense? That's Jarasandha. Even though he's really a scholar of all kinds of scriptures and yajnas, and he's an extremely powerful personality in every way, still, due to the false ego, the most obvious things are covered. Like a cloud covers the sun, the false ego covers even the most obvious thing. And Arjuna, he's young, he's weak. Bhima, he's a good match. So they fought for so many days, Bhima and Jarasandha, and ultimately Bhima realized, I cannot defeat this man, and he can't defeat me. So we're going to just keep fighting until we get old and die, because there's no way I can defeat him, and there's no way he could defeat me. We're totally equally matched in strength and using clubs. So Bhima's humility was, he cried out to Krishna, because they would fight from sunrise to sunset. After sunset, Jarasandha hosted them as VIP guests. He gave them nice prasad and nice accommodations, everything. They would talk very friendly. And the next morning, they would try to kill each other all day. They would be, their whole lives were completely obsessed with killing the other until sunset. And then they became friends. And they respected each other. They honored each other. This is the way of Kshatriyas. So Bhima, with all of his power, with all of his fame, said, Krishna, this, I turn to you. And Krishna gave him the clue. Because Krishna knows everything, internally, externally, inside, outside. He's within the heart of every living being. He knows past, present, and future. He knows our strengths. He knows our weaknesses. And he's like that with everyone. So nobody in the world knew the history of Jarasandha, but Krishna knew. There was a king who had two queens, and Jarasandha was born in two halves. There were just two halves, they weren't alive. They were like just dead half bodies. So what to do with it? It's quite embarrassing. So he just threw the two bodies in the forest. And Jara, who was a mystic lady who lived in the forest, she knew all different types of tantric arts. And she put the two halves of the bodies together and brought it to life. And he was unbelievably powerful. His one arm had more strength than 10,000 elephants. He was, in many ways, the prominent asura of the universe. We read about how Kamsa defeated the Garga Samhita tells, he defeated so many different asuras and brought them just to the point where he was about to kill them, and they surrendered to him. And then they became his obedient servants, Agasura, Putana, Aristasura, Keshi, Vatsasura, Pralambasura. They were all the obedient servants of Kamsa. Even though they had their own kingdoms and they had their own unbelievable, incredible yogic powers, physical powers, still Kamsa was superior. But Kamsa was the son-in-law of Jarasandha. And Kamsa, the one person he honored in this world was Jarasandha, like a superior. So we can understand how powerful Jarasandha is. And when Kamsa was killed and his two daughters came crying to their father, that Kamsa was so nice and Krishna so evil. He killed him unfairly. Jarasandha believed his daughters. And he took vow to destroy Krishna. Krishna moved from Mathura to Dwarka to deal with all these attacks so that he could do it without disturbance to all the citizens. He relocated them in an island around the ocean. So Jarasandha was extremely powerful. Nobody but Krishna could defeat him. Even the strongest man in the world, Bhima, could not defeat him. But Krishna knew his weakness. He knew his strengths and his weakness. He was put together in two parts. So that place where he was put together is his weakness. And he indicated to Bhima, he took a branch from a tree and kind of just split it open, like, so Bhima knew what to do. So they were fighting, and Bhima put his leg on one, he put his foot on Jarasandha's one leg, and then he took the other leg and ripped it up. And Jarasandha was again in two pieces, and again he was without life. So this was a great episode. After many, many days, weeks of fighting, with no one getting an advantage over the other, Bhima did like that. Krishna saved him. Krishna saved him by giving him instruction. Sometimes we see Krishna saves us by coming with his Sudarshan Chakra or by lifting Govardhan Hill. In this case, he saved Bhima just by just giving him an indication of an instruction of how to do it himself. And Bhima was humbled by the whole thing. He didn't think, look, I killed Jarasandha. He's thinking, Krishna killed him through me. So in the same way, devotees, whatever we accomplish, if we take credit, it's like Bhima saying, I killed Jarasandha. Srila Prabhupada would say, I made your qualifications. He said to all of us. So the only reason we have any spiritual influence anywhere is because we have heard from our Guru Parampara, from the great saints who are repeating Krishna's words. So intelligence is to recognize, I'm just an instrument. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. We speak Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna and people of the world say, oh, you are saving me. And if we say, yes, I am saving you. And we don't understand Bhagavad Gita. It's just like a tape recorder repeating it. The heart of Bhagavad Gita is Sharanagati, surrendering to Krishna. He's the doer. He's the intelligence of my intelligence. He's the strength of the strong. It's his words, it's his service, it's his grace that gives me any qualification. And that was Bhima's understanding. And then what did Krishna do after that? After he was glorified, Krishna took the son of Jarasandha, whose name was Sahadev, and coronated him as the king. In other words, Bhima was not fighting to get a kingdom. Krishna didn't want his money, he didn't want his property, he just wanted to protect Dharma. Because Jarasandha wanted to give the kingdom ultimately to his son anyway. So Krishna gave it to Sahadev. The whole kingdom, all your wealth, everything, it's yours. But Sahadev was enlightened by the whole experience. And he released all the 20,800 kings that were in prison. And by the description of them, of Sukadev Goswami, we can understand what they went through. It describes they were imprisoned for a long time, perhaps many years. Their clothes were completely in shambles. They had no facilities to bathe. They were filthy, dirty. They had practically no food. They were emaciated, hungry. They were starving, and they were so thin, they had no strength left in their bodies. And previously, these were each kings with their own kingdoms. With such power, with such royal wealth. And can you imagine living in a dark, torturous prison, being neglected, being intimidated, constantly being harassed with to put fear in their hearts? That's how they lived. And they were living with 20,800 others. They were really miserable. But Jarasandha was so powerful, they could not even, there was no possibility of even an uprise against him. So in their total hopelessness, they sent a message to Krishna. They couldn't even approach him directly because Krishna's in Dwarka and they can't get out. So through a Brahmin, they express themselves, or through a messenger. When they were released from prison, they came before Krishna in this most miserable state, physically. But they were so happy because they were seeing Krishna. They all bowed their heads at Krishna's lotus feet and offered prayers. In their prayers, they expressed how fortunate they were. As kings, we had so much pride. And kings could be very competitive. So all those 20,800 kings, they were fighting among themselves too. They were suspicious among themselves. They were trying to conquer each other for so many years. But now even their foes, those who were, sometimes they were envious of them, sometimes they were arrogant toward them, they were trying to get things from them, they were territorial, disputes between them. It was politics against each other. But when they were all in prison together for all those years, completely with nothing, they actually made good friends with each other. They had nothing to fight about. And in many ways, they had one voice. When they sent that message to Krishna, all their hearts were with one voice, Krishna, save us. Trinadapi sunichena tarori bhase hishuna amani namanadena kirtaniya sadhani. They really were more humble than blades of grass. Like Sankirtan. When devotees understanding the precarious position of this material world and how we're all in it together, we cry out for Krishna's mercy in kirtan together. So when they came before Krishna and bowed down and offered prayers, they said it was actually your grace that we were put in prison. Because we could have never taken shelter of you in the situation we were in. But you have completely crushed all of our pride that we're great. And they were explaining how when you get a leadership position in this world, it's almost an irresistible tendency to be thinking in terms of I and mine and your and you and yours. As soon as we think I and mine, then that duality comes in of you and yours, and there's a conflict. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Bhakti means everything is Krishna's. I'm Krishna's part and parcel. You're Krishna's child. And everything in existence my skills, my knowledge, my wealth, and all the wealth of the entire universal creation. It's all Krishna's. By the power of time, everything is going to be taken away. The kings express this. These bodies are constantly being diminished by the power of time. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, time I am. Ultimately, we all have to surrender to the power of time. And yet, while we have this little time, we waste it so much in these I and mine, becoming so foolishly depressed sometimes, proud sometimes. The kings, they were so enlightened at this point just by seeing Krishna. Because you see, they're seeing Krishna and they're actually seeing Krishna. Yegata mam prapadyante tham stataiva bhajanya. Krishna reveals himself as we surrender to him. Jarasandha saw Krishna so many times. 17 times. He fought against Krishna. And then afterwards, Krishna personally kind of just tied him up and then let him go. So he saw Krishna. He was defeated by Krishna. But he wasn't seeing Krishna with love. He wasn't surrendering to Krishna. He was seeing Krishna as his enemy. He wasn't seeing Krishna as the all-beautiful goal of life. So these kings, because of what they went through in this material world, and because they truly humbled themselves, and because they realized that Krishna is my only shelter, and they surrender to Krishna with heartfelt devotion. When they saw Krishna, they actually saw Krishna. Krishna revealed himself to them. Krishna's in the form of, he is the deity. And Sri Radha is the deity. What do we see? To the degree we humble ourselves and surrender, we see Krishna. Whether we like it or not, Krishna sees us. But when he's pleased by what he sees, he reveals himself to us. And then we actually see Krishna. So incredibly, all 20,800 kings, they all spoke and said that it wasn't Jarasandha being cruel to us. That was just an external thing. Even though he was so abusive, so violent, so hateful, he tortured them. He terrorized them daily. They forgave him. As soon as they saw Krishna, all spite, all anger and envy, and all vengeance, it's like when the sun rises, all darkness is dispelled. Because they surrendered to Krishna, they saw Krishna as he is. And then they saw everything that happened to them as great mercy. Whatever happened brought us to this point of surrendering. So they were actually thankful to Jarasandha. They weren't envious. They weren't hateful. They were thankful. Somehow or other, Krishna worked through him to bring us to see you, to love you. And they offered their lives to him. And the only benediction they ask from Krishna is to always remember you. They didn't ask for their health back. They didn't ask for their kingdoms back. They didn't ask for anything. Except, let us always remember you. Because they, through what they had been through in life, they understood that's really the only thing that lasts. Everything else is coming and going, like the nights and days of this world. Yesterday was January 14th, 2016. It's gone forever. That date will never come back in this day of Brahma. So similarly, everything in this world comes and goes. So the only thing that's really has substance is the soul, which is eternal, and Krishna, who is the eternal source of the soul, and who is the eternal goal and object of love of the soul. So they prayed in every situation, in light or darkness, whatever it may be, let us just remember you. And in this way, they gave their hearts to Krishna. Krishna was so pleased with them. He spoke. He said, I give you the blessing you're asking for. You will always remember me. In pleasure or pain, honor or dishonor, victory or defeat, good times or hard times, you will always remember me. You will always find my shelter. Now you must go back and rule your kingdoms. They didn't care. They were willing to do anything for Krishna. Go back. Always remember me, always think of me in every situation. And rule your citizens with the principles of Dharma, with compassion, as a servant for their benefit. And have children. Come together again with your family and create progeny and children to carry on this great tradition of your forefathers, but with devotion, with love. And Krishna honored the king so much because of their surrender, their humility, their devotion. He called for Sahadev, the son of Jarasandha. And Krishna instructed him, give them everything. So they had all these, it was a big kingdom. They had people coming and personally bathing the kings because they hadn't bathed in years. They bathed them with all kinds of nice fragrances and substances, and it's not like that they had to wait in line to get in the bathhouse. Simultaneously, he had personal servants bathing each one, and Sahadev was facilitating everything. The son of Jarasandha, the son of their enemy. And they bathed them and put fragrances on them. And then, by Krishna's will, Sahadev arranged an incredible feast of the most nice prasad, because they hadn't eaten a meal properly in years. And they ate nicely, and then Sahadev, under Krishna's will, gave them beautiful clothes, silken garments, put crowns on their heads, precious jewel necklaces and other ornaments, gave them all their weapons, magnificent chariots. And then Krishna sent them back to their kingdoms. This story is important, because in this world, reversals come to everyone. And if we could pick and choose the reversals we want, they won't serve their purpose. Reversals come when they're really what we don't like, what we really don't like to tolerate. They come at the wrong times and the wrong places and the wrong ways. That's what a reversal is. It's not like on the internet where you order the type of reversal you want and then you download it instantly. comes by destiny. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano. These 20,800 kings really exemplified this verse. This verse is spoken by Brahma in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. That Krishna, those who even in the most difficult times bow down to you with a grateful heart, that person alone is entitled to liberation. It is that person who finds shelter in you. Brahma himself was completely bewildered. We heard the story from Raghunath Prabhu 2 days back. Brahma himself was completely bewildered. Although, you know, he speaks to Narada, Narada speaks to Vyas, Vyas compiles the Vedas. Who's Brahma? He's not a bewildered person, but he was bewildered by Krishna. And that was the highlight of his life, because in that bewilderment, he completely surrendered to Krishna. He realized, I'm nothing without you. And when he surrendered to Krishna, then for the first time he could see Vrindavan. He was already there in Vrindavan. When he stole the calves and the cows, the calves and the gopas, the cowherd boys, he was seeing Vrindavan. But he was seeing with eyes that were covered by this janasya moho yamaha mameti, these I and mine. I am Brahma. You are cowherd boys. So he was seeing Vrindavan with his eyes, but he wasn't seeing it as it is. But after his total bewilderment, and when you read that story carefully, he was totally bewildered. Krishna can be so thorough. When Indra had false pride, he could have lifted Govardhan Hill with 2 hands. But Krishna wanted to so thoroughly destroy Indra's pride that he lifted it with the little finger of his left hand. Not even with his little finger, with the tip of his little finger. And for 7 days, Indra was with all of his powers, with all of his armies, with his most powerful clouds and storms, with his own thunderbolts. He couldn't move Govardhan from the finger. And on top of the hill, he couldn't uproot a single blade of grass. He couldn't separate a single leaf from the limitless trees. Indra was humbled. Brahma was humbled. And when Brahma was humbled, he chanted this verse, that when someone is going through difficulties in life and with a grateful heart they turn to you, they bow to you, that person will be liberated by you. So these kings are in that state. Here they are, royal persons, fighting with each other, suspicious of each other, envious of each other. But now that they've all been through the same difficulty themselves, realizing they're helpless, and now, because they surrendered to Krishna, now they're seeing Krishna. Just by seeing Krishna at that moment, all of their lust, envy, anger, arrogance, greed, and illusion was dispelled. Krishna Surya Samaya Hoya Andhaka. Just like all darkness is dispelled in the presence of the sunshine. The sun. So you see, they weren't liberated when they were in prison. And they weren't even liberated when they were crying out for Krishna. But because they had the proper mood when they actually came before Krishna, they were completely liberated. Krishna's in his name. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. If we truly humble ourselves like grass, if like these people, we're tolerant and forgiving like a tree, if we learn to respect others and not demand respect ourselves, if we have this attitude, this character of being the servant of the servant of the servant, then Krishna, who's in his name, just by hearing the name, by being in the presence of the name, which is none different than being present with the form of Krishna, then we actually taste the name as it is, and we become completely purified. The scriptures say like this, if we could just one time chant one mantra of Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
In this offenseless state of mind, then just that one recitation of Krishna's name will completely purify us of all anartas, of all the unwanted things in our lives. But we have to chant in this mood. And our whole life is preparing us to chant in that mood, to come before the deity in that mood, to read the Srimad Bhagavatam in this mood. So they had no envy, they had no anger, they had no hatred toward anyone. It couldn't exist in their heart. Oh, they were filled with those things before. But because they took shelter of Krishna, Krishna revealed himself. And they were completely liberated, pure devotees of the Lord. And they went back to do the same exact things that they were doing before. They were ruling their kingdoms, but in a completely different state of mind. And coming to today's verse, Jarasandha, now he's gone. Sahadev, his son, is now a great devotee of Krishna. Everything his father represented, his son is the opposite. He's a well-wisher of everyone now. And Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima return to Indraprastha. And they tell Yudhisthira Maharaj what happened. And Yudhisthira Maharaj is so happy. He's crying. He's crying in the ecstasy of love and gratitude to Krishna. In fact, he can't even talk. He's speechless. He's so overwhelmed. Krishna's so kind. Everything is for Krishna. And now he can perform the Rajasuya Yajna. And why is he doing the Rajasuya Yajna? He's not asking Krishna to come to help him for his purposes, which is usually what people do. They approach Krishna, please help me for my purpose. He's performing the Rajasuya Yajna so that he could fulfill God's purpose. Not my will, but thy will be done. That was his mood. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanirbhavati bharata. The Supreme Lord descends into this world to show compassion, to show mercy on everyone. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, being a king, he wanted simply to do that. He loved his citizens. And real love is for the body, for the mind, and for the soul. He could give food, he could give medical treatment, he could give economic prosperity, but still everyone's going to die and nobody's going to be really happy even with all that. So I'll give them all that. But along with that, I will give them the real purpose of life. What is the purpose of life? To understand Krishna is the goal. He's our eternal father, our eternal mother, our eternal friend, our eternal lover. So he wanted to make the most powerful statement that could be made, because he was in that position. The little spider was putting grains of sand as a contribution to the bridge across the ocean, and Hanuman was putting mountains, which had quadrillions of grains of sand on it at one time. But they were both doing what they could do. So Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to be the unrivaled king of the whole world only for one purpose, so that everyone could appreciate Krishna's position. The Rajasuya Yajna was only for this purpose. The Agra Puja is before the Yajna really culminates. Yudhisthira Maharaj worships and honors the most important person. And who was assembled at the Rajasuya sacrifice? This Srimad Bhagavatam describes all the greatest Brahmins of history were there. It wasn't just some official people like we have in a lot of our ceremonies today. Vasishtha Muni was there. Parasara Muni was there. Vedavyas was there. Narada Muni was there. Gautam Muni was there. Vishwamitra Muni was there. Bhardraj Muni was there. And the list goes on and on. Atri Muni, Agastya Muni, they were all there. And all the kings of the planet were there with the princes and the queens. Incredible assembly. So who is the person who is going to be given the highest honor? In the presence of everyone, Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to show Krishna's ultimate truth of being the cause of all causes, the source of everything, and the ultimate object of all love and mercy. So when all the great Brahmins and all the great kings and everyone else was there, Bhishma was there, most powerful hero of the universe, demigods were coming. Yudhisthira opened it up. Who is the person that should be worshipped? And his younger brother Sahadev, not Jarasandha's son, but the Pandava Sahadev, he stood up and said, Krishna should be worshipped. Because he's the cause of all causes. He's the source of everything that exists. He's inside and outside of everything and everyone. And if we worship Krishna, we automatically worship ourselves and everyone else. Like watering the root of a tree, it extends to every tree. Anyone else we worship, it's not going to have that effect. But if we worship Krishna, we worship everything, everyone, to its essence, to its perfection. Whatever we have is coming from him. These bodies, their temporary nature, unless they surrender to Krishna and find shelter in Krishna, they're just vanquished. And after they're vanquished, it's really there has been no purpose to our life unless we find shelter So Sahadev speaks like this. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's washing Krishna's lotus feet. And amazingly, every Brahmin and everybody agreed with Sahadev, except. And that's coming in the next verses. Yudhisthira Maharaj is weeping in ecstasy, washing Krishna's feet and honoring Krishna. And everybody's praising Krishna. This is the ultimate perfection of Yudhisthira Maharaj's life. He doesn't care about being a king. He doesn't care. He just wants to give everyone Krishna. Whoever we are, Lord Chaitanya said, whether it's the Kurma Brahman, who's a householder, whether it's Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who's a Goswami, whoever we are, just receive Krishna in our own hearts and share him with others. That's the perfection. Doesn't matter if we're kings or farmers, whatever it may be. So this was Yudhisthira Maharaj. He was in ecstasy of love, just showing the world that he's simply the servant of the servant and the servant of Krishna. And to love Krishna is the greatest goal and purpose of our lives. And as everyone's praising Krishna, and Yudhisthira Maharaj is doing this ultimate ceremony for Krishna, Shishupal, at that moment, he just erupted like a volcano of envy. And we will discuss this next class. Thank you very much. Yudhisthira is Krishna's cousin. And Shishupal is Krishna's cousin. Very interesting. Yudhisthira is the son of Kunti. And Kunti is the sister of Vasudev. So they're cousins. And Shishupal is also Krishna's cousin. Yudhisthira is a king of Indraprastha. Shishupal is Damagosh. He's king of another province. So they're both kings. They're both Krishna's personal cousins. From that perspective, they have identical relationships. But the difference is Yudhisthira's heart's deepest desire is to praise Krishna and do everything for Krishna. And Shishupal's greatest, deepest desire was to somehow or other, because of his envy, to hurt Krishna. So as Yudhisthira Maharaj is glorifying him, his other cousin Shishupal is just about to say the most terrible, insulting, blasphemous words about Krishna. But the amazing thing is he really believes it. That's the way the false ego is. He was seeing nothing but duplicity and inferior qualities in Krishna. What he says are unbelievable, it's inconceivable, it's incredible what he's saying, but he believes it. Because he's seeing Krishna, he's feeling Krishna through the filter of the envy of his heart. And Yudhisthira is seeing the same person through the pure love of his heart. And ultimately, we're all children of Krishna. And we all have our free will to be like Yudhisthira or Shishupal. And we're about to see what Shishupal says and what happens to Shishupal. And we're about to see what happens to Yudhisthira. He surrenders with pure love, and then he's exiled to the forest for 14 years. But he never gave up his pure love. He never gave up his faith. Being a pure devotee doesn't mean that things go the way we want them to in this material world. Being a pure devotee means whatever happens, our love grows by remembering Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there one question? This will be the only question, so please say something very unique.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, as you were speaking about the kings, a stage came in their life, they became completely, they understood that they are helpless. When we spend some years in devotional life, after getting kicks and kicks of material world, we come to a conclusion that we are helpless and hopeless in this material world. And only Krishna's mercy is the only hope. And only causeless mercy of Krishna is the only shelter we'll be having in this material world. So a stage comes and we understand it, that I am a fish without a water. Only Krishna's mercy is my only shelter. After that, Maharaj, we read the pastimes, many of the pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now we know it, that Krishna is the autocrat. Now we need only Krishna's mercy is the only shelter, and Krishna is the autocrat. He can give the mercy or he cannot give the mercy. It is up to him to take the call. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we can see many of the pastimes like Maharaj Indradumna Maharaj. He surrendered everything and he was doing his tapascharya, remembering the Lord, and he could not serve one sage, and that sage cursed him, and he had to become Gajendra, means he became an elephant. Then we know the example of Bharat Maharaj, King Bharat. He did so much tapascharya, and then also he had to become a deer. Then we know the case of Chitrakut Maharaj. He also had to become a demon, Vritrasur. All those are very great souls. And yet, Krishna, because Krishna is autocrat, Krishna gave that decision that, okay, you have to stay in this material world, but you have to come after some point, but I'll accept you, but not in this lifetime. So these examples are there. On the contrary, in Chaitanya Charitamrita also we see a lady who was considered as Dukhi, and Maharaj Mahaprabhu told him, from today onwards, you'll become Sukhi. And on the spot, she got pure love of God. On the other hand, Vrindavan Das Thakur's mother, Mahaprabhu told her that you chant the holy name, and she chanted the holy name, and immediately she started experiencing love of God. We know the case of Jagai and Madhai also. Immediately they got love of God. So on one side we see Chaitanya Charitamrita and we say, wow, this is wonderful. This gives sorts of relief to us. That this is wonderful, we can get pure love of God so fast. And on the other hand, when we see Srimad Bhagavatam, we see it is not so easy. It can take lots of births also. Because Krishna, and we know that we are a causeless mercy case. Finally, Krishna is an autocrat also. He can give it or he cannot give it. So Maharaj, I want to know that, can we come to know that what is there in Krishna's mind for us? So that, because we don't know what decision Krishna is going to take for us, and we have to follow that decision. So at least we can go on preparing our mind and accept it, what Krishna's decision will be coming, and wholeheartedly accept it out. Because finally, we are a causeless mercy case.
Thank you. We have just heard from Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu a summary study of Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada gave us the wonderful guidance wherein we approach Srimad Bhagavatam through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the answer. By being the servant of the servant of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Padayate. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes so many incarnations. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasingha, Vamana, Parasuram, Ramchandra, describes Kalki and Buddha, but the culmination is Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna, who is the origin and the source of all other incarnations. Who is origin and source doesn't mean in chronological time. It means Krishna has all the six opulences, has all the qualities of the Absolute Truth or Bhagavan manifested in fullest. It's like there's the full moon, and there's a three-quarter moon, and there's a half moon. It's the same moon. It's not that the moon is different. But the full moon displays the fullness of the moon. So Krishna, all these the Bhagavatam describes all these great eternal avatars of the Lord are all Krishna. But Krishna manifests his total fullness as Krishna. In the sweetness of his love with his devotees, his beauty, his pastimes. But Rupa Goswami tells Namo Mahabharanyaya, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but he's even more merciful than Krishna. Because in the Srimad Bhagavatam we see Bharat Maharaj and Chitraketu Maharaj and so many examples you've given. And that's mercy. He gave such mercy to them. And by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we could learn from them. We have to learn the lesson of being very diligent in proper association. Otherwise, what happened to Bharat Maharaj will happen to us. We have to learn the lessons of Chitraketu Maharaj. And how they all ultimately came to the point of surrender, the Pandavas. But when we take shelter of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we receive what we read about in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in due course. Because Lord Chaitanya is most forgiving and merciful, especially in this age of Kali, where hardly anyone has divine qualities. There's such a mixture in everyone's hearts. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu have come to give the highest gift to the lowest people. He's given us simple principles. Just learn to associate with devotees. Just learn to be kind and respectful to other beings. Don't make aparads. Live by simple, basic moral principles. And with a humble state of mind, chant the names of Krishna. And just by doing that, the highest perfection awaits all of us. Srila Prabhupada in Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan began his great mission of translating and writing purports to the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. But he begins with an introduction of the life of Lord Chaitanya. And he tells why. Because to really be able to access these great teachings of Bhagavatam in our lives, we must see the Bhagavatam through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Then that highest gift is easily accessible. in this spirit, these 20,800 kings. They were competitive. Some of them were enemies with each other. But when they all saw what life was really about, and they saw through all the superficialities of everything they had and everything they were craving for and everything they were proud of, then they all took shelter of Krishna. And they became absolutely well-wishers and friends of each other, and even of Jarasandha and everyone, because they had pure hearts. So Lord Chaitanya is giving an express, direct means by which we could come to those conclusions. In this, with this appreciation, we loudly together fill the world with His grace by chanting the holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Ananti Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Hare Krishna.